All right. Welcome to the Inclusion Solution Live podcast. This is season 7 of our podcast, and the theme this season is Justice for All. I am your host this episode, Lee Morrison. I am the manager of learning and innovation here at the Winters Group, and my background is in education and gender studies. So at work, I design learning experiences for our clients and community. And in all areas of my life, I am a queer white person, a storyteller, an educator, and an enthusiastic lifelong learner. So as I mentioned, our theme this season is Justice for All. We are celebrating the Winters Group's 40th anniversary of working toward equity and justice in the workplace, and invite you to join us this season to deepen your understanding of why injustices persist and what you can do to support and work with those most impacted. And I'm very excited that this season we will feature speakers from our 2024 Racial Justice at Work Summit, also with the theme of Justice for All. So today I am joined by one of those speakers, Rob Smith, founder of Fluid, and I'll share just a short bio before passing it over to Rob to share a bit more. So Rob is the founder of Fluid, the Fluid Project, Get Fluid, and the Fluid Foundation. He has created a brand combining his profession, which is retail, along with his passion, a commitment to social justice. Rob began a long career in retail spanning over 30 years, orchestrating multi-billion dollar businesses through merchandising, e-commerce, marketing, product development, and supply chain management with Macy's, Victoria's Secret, Levi's, and Nike, among others. Rob leads the CSR committee as a board of director for Steve Madden and is an executive in residence with Wonderkind. And Rob lives in New York City with his husband, Rod Grosier, and his dog, Jackson. Welcome, Rob. So glad you could join us today.
Thank you for having me, Lee. I appreciate that. I appreciate being a part of this movement and grateful that you've committed to it for so many years. And I was like listening to you talk about it and thinking how incredible for so many years working on Justice for All and the fact that we're still fighting. And I just think about like, wow, does it end, if it ever ends? And hopefully in our lifetime we see movement, but thank you for your work that you and your colleagues do. It's appreciated.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you could tell us a bit more about your background and how you came to this work, what inspired you to open Fluid, the world's first gender-free store?
Yep. Okay. I'll be very honest with you, because it's a interesting story, to be fair. So I think, you know, for so long, so much of my life, from the time I was a kid, I was, you know, volunteering, working in you know call centers, crisis hotlines, volunteering at hospitals. I've always had that in my blood, and it's always been a part of who I am. And then coming out as queer, you know, when I became queer, like I adopted somebody who had HIV/AIDS. I did whatever I could to help support our community. Then I took a lull for a bit. And then when I moved to New York, I joined a board of Hedrick Martin, the Hedrick Martin Institute, which is the first LGBTQ after school program for youth here in New York City. And so I joined the board and got really involved and joined the board of Athlete Ally. And that was always like this, like with my daytime, I was working in, you know, corporate retail space, and at nighttime in social justice spaces. And then I remember, like, I went to my first Burning Man, and my first Burning Man, I'm not sure if you've ever been, but, you know, I don't know, there was this, like, the way this construct of 75,000 people came together and everyone adapted and adjusted to this, the social codes and of a radical acceptance and, you know, just like just being yourself. And I watched people just open up and when you're away from this construct here that we live in and this new construct. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be nice if the world was like this? And I didn't know what I was going to do, but somehow I thought I would participate in that. So I came back and I quit my job. And there's a saying, don't quit your job after your first Burning Man, but I didn't know that. I just knew that I had to do something different. And so I traveled around the world by myself and backpacked and really intentionally, and I spent part of it a month in the Amazon, and I did a month of ayahuasca. And in one of the ceremonies, I went in and asked the plant, you know, what do I do with my life? In the morning, I wrote down, consider opening a gender-free, non-binary shopping environment. I wrote fluid in quotation marks. And I said, that's what I'm going to do. And I opened the store 10 months later. And then it's been a journey ever since. So it's, I think it's just leaning in, opening up, and allowing the universe to guide you and to follow it and have faith and have an open heart and open mind and let things go the way they go. And so it's been an amazing journey since then, about 8 years ago. Yeah, it's been 8 years.
Wow, that is incredible. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I think I also really relate to this idea of during the day, sometimes you are showing up to work and you also have this passion for justice and trying to find a space where you can combine the two of them. And it's so exciting that you have been able to make that happen. I also really believe that we have to pay attention to what we want to grow. And I think your story just exemplifies that to me. So thank you so
much.
Appreciate
that. You know, and then ever since then, it's, I always say things are never the way that you expect them to be. They're always different and they never happen when you want them to happen, but they always happen bigger than you can imagine on a different timeline. So I'm living in this space that I just keep planting seeds and planting seeds, and then this garden starts to, like, a flower shoots up here, another one there, and just, you know, to think that I just opened up a store, and then, you know, you mentioned it, like, then we launched, you know, wholesale business, and then launching Get Fluid gender expansive training for corporations, and then launching the Fluid Foundation, and I've got other things in the pipeline too that are really exciting, the Fluid Media space and other spaces, that it just keeps growing and evolving, and I stand back and sometimes watch the miracle of what it is. And I don't think it's, honestly, it's not me. I think of myself as a vessel for the universe. And I just let it come into me. And I'm like, I can't stop this idea. Like, it's so clear. I have to go and put energy into it or I'll go mad. But yeah, it's amazing the way these things just keep getting born. And then I get to, like, water them and nurture them and let them grow into what they are, and then bring great team members on to help them execute, because I can't do it all myself. And I find that, like, it's better off when I step back and let my team do their thing. I just and move on to the next thing.
That's
fun.
Amazing.
It's fun. It's fun. It's like, I know, I probably sound like I'm out of my mind microdosing, but I'm having a great time.
That is fantastic. And I love that metaphor of planting seeds as well. So I know I mentioned earlier, I have a background in gender studies, and specifically, I get so excited about intersectionality in these conversations. And I think it's such an important part of how we understand and move forward in the situations in which we find ourselves today, some of them very challenging. So I know you identify as Two-Spirit, and I was wondering if you could explain to listeners who may not be aware what that means and a bit more about how your Indigenous ancestry influences your work.
Yep, that's such a great question. Thank you for bringing that up, because I identify as he, they for two reasons. One, I encourage people, if they don't know someone's gender pronouns, that they default to they, them, because it's one way to not misgender someone. So I answer by they, them. I don't identify as non-binary, but I do identify as Indigenous people look at gender as it being spiritual, and this the essence of who I am and or who we are as humans. I should think all of us have the ability to tap into being, you know, gender diverse in our spirit and our essence. And I, as a queer kid, I grew up and was born with very much a strong feminine side. Like, my attributes, my in this construct of what femininity is, like, I was very artistic, creative, loving, nurturing. You know, I wasn't drawn to sports like my brothers and competition. I wasn't drawn to that. I was drawn to really like the soft, sensitive, you know, beautiful side. And I kind of turned away from that as I got into like high school too, because I saw that the only way to kind of really fit into society was to lean into the masculine side. And so I leaned into like sports and more competition. And then I found the balance in myself of really being comfortable with both feminine and masculine. And I think that comes through in who I am as a human being and in everyday life and every situation. So I love the feminine. I love the masculine. Both are divine. And finding the balance is, I think, you know, part of why fluid is called fluid. Fluid is the ability to navigate between two spaces easily. Fluidity, and the pH stands for balance. And finding that balance within each one of us, within society, to me, that's where harmony happens. That's where peace happens. So I'm trying to like not just find it and own it in myself, but also to embrace it and help others find it as well.
That is so powerful. Thank you.
So yeah, so I did. So I did. Part of my journey was understanding, learning about ancient religions, civilizations, and I went to, besides going to Central America, South America, I went to India, Nepal, and Tibet, and learned a lot about Buddhism and Hinduism and Sikhism and Islam. And then I came back, and then I took my mom to the reservation where her mom was born. And that's where I learned about Two-Spirit. So I learned about my relationship with and part of my indigenous heritage. And then I also learned about, that's where I learned about Two-Spirit. And so I changed the parent company to Two-Spirit LLC. That's the parent company of Fluid and really standing and owning that part of myself. It's been super powerful. And that began the journey of Fluid. Like it just all happened together.
Wow, I love that. And I think to your point, I do believe that everyone has the capacity for embodying gender expansiveness. And I think so often it's something that our day-to-day culture does not encourage. And many times people don't find the joy of this until later in their life. I'm so excited about the work that you're doing so that folks can find who they are and find some of this purpose earlier than may have been possible.
I also think it's important for people to know that it's not exclusively queer. Like to be, yes, you know, to be, to embrace feminine as a male identified person doesn't make you queer. It doesn't make you anything other than somebody who's on a path to becoming a more balanced human, a more, I don't say a better human, but somebody who's capable to embrace the human experience at the full potential of the human experience. So I think that I just want to invite anyone who's listening to this that, you know, understanding feminine and masculine does not make you queer. It does not make you less of a man or less of a woman. It makes you more of a human being. And so that's how I look at it. It's about abundance. It's about, you know, and also.
Yes, bringing that abundance mindset to every part of our life. I am such a huge proponent.
That's right.
Thank you for that. Sure. So I know you also spent a lot of time immersed in queer communities, just listening and learning. And I was wondering if there is anything that you would like to share around what you took away from that time.
Yeah, I would. So when Fluid started, we opened as the world's first gender-free store, and it was a store that was degendered fashion, which is pretty cool because you get to walk around and, you know, experience different ways to express yourself without a department store, anyone else telling you what you can buy and not buy. But it was also deeply grounded in community and activism and education. And in 2 years, we had over 250 events in those 2 years, with which were panel discussions and fashion shows and comedy nights. And but I think my favorite part was we had a social code, and one of the social codes is we're all students, we're all teachers. And I was able to sit there for 2 years and just have, there was a coffee shop, and listen and learn and meet people and meet so many people that, in my experience, you know, because while we are one community, we're made up of a bunch of smaller communities, and not often do, black femmes, like, congregate with, white gay men. And there's generational gap, there's racial gaps, there's all the other things that keep us apart. But this space united all of us. And I got to really understand the full queer experience, the full queer communities, and to be a place where someone who, if you look at me, might not trust me, because people who look like me have been abusive in the queer community in many ways, have, ridden the backs of Black and brown trans women to equality, but then turned our backs when we got what we wanted. And so there's a level of lack of trust, which I understand. And so it began to rebuild trust between me and other folks. And then I thought, well, wow, how can I take these incredible lessons that I've learned, there's so much that I've learned, and how can I, as a student, become a teacher, and how can I start to bring this understanding? This is way before, pronouns were like something we were talking about, like in a major way, but starting to letting corporations know that Gen Z is a generation is very diverse. And this was before the Gallup polls of, understanding 21% of adult Gen Z is queer. This was like, 5 years before that. And so I started educating. I always felt like kind of Paul Revere, like letting corporations know that Gen Z's coming. Get ready for them. They're amazing. I felt like I was like the town crier, like letting everyone know that they were coming. So just a great experience. And I, every day, my team reminds me how blessed I am to be surrounded by so many different people with so many different experiences and ideas, and how much better we are when we surround ourselves by people who are very different than us, with different perspectives, different points of views, and we come together and align on a clear path forward that allows everyone a space to thrive. Yep.
That is so important. I think a lot about coalition building in this work. And I think especially in this day and age where we see so much polarization and kind of backlash, it is just so important for us to be able to work on building trust and listening to one another, learning, assuming we always have more to learn, I think is very critical to my own personal and professional values. And I love how your story also just really exemplifies that. So thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's important to stay curious, to stay open-minded. I think there's a, when it comes to the queer community, there's from an externally, I'm sure you'll appreciate this, that externally, non-queer people just assume we're all understanding of each other, that we all support each other, that we are all like one community. I don't see it happen enough. I see it in small towns, which is really interesting. When you go to a small town bar, you see the full community in this one bar. In big towns, we're very separated, very different. And I just don't see that with the life expectancy of a trans woman of color in this country at 35 years old. I don't see gay men and gay women who have access to money and to influence doing what they can to support the folks who are least vulnerable in our community through the intersectionality of being both, Black and brown, trans and female. And I just don't see enough of it, that there's not enough of a responsibility. And I'm often disappointed in our community that we're not united as much as we can be and supportive enough as we can be. So I'm trying to be the catalyst for that change if I can.
Yes, centering those most impacted is how we talk about actualizing justice at the Winters Group. And I think It is. Yeah, it is so easy for people's own power and privilege to impact their understanding and trust of others if we're not being really mindful about where we hold that power. So I think, yeah, just something for all of us to continue to keep in mind. And related to some of what you have touched on, I know we've seen a lot of recent events in the news that are bringing attention to really devastating legislative attacks and tragedies impacting queer people, queer youth, and their allies. And I don't know about you, I always kind of feel this sense of internal conflict when I see some of this news coverage, because on one hand, I'm really glad that we're bringing awareness to the real human impact of these attacks on people's ability to just live their lives. Yeah. And on another, I know we were emailing about this earlier, it takes a real emotional toll, you know, every time we see this come up. And I really also want people to see more than just queer trauma, but the immense joy and love and care that I see queer communities showing up with for one another and for humanity as a whole, even as we continue to learn and fall short in some ways. So I would love to know, what comes to mind for you when you hear about these news stories, and how do you think about the path forward?
It's such a good question. You know, we were just last week, I'm not sure when this will be filmed, but we just dealt with the death of Nex in Oklahoma, and that really hurt home. And every day that there's these ridiculous laws that are being presented, and it's just the lack of humanity and empathy behind each one of these, the selfishness or ignorance, I don't know, or maybe all of it, that exists behind each of these attempts to eradicate and eliminate a human life. And it's there's certain times when I walk between being angry and then really sad, and sometimes both at the same time. And that was with Nex, was I was pissed off, and I was also so just depressed, and it's like I felt like a little piece of my life disappeared with Nex loss. So, and then there's also a fire in me that says, like, you know, we've got to stop this, and, you know, and how can we do it? And we can do it as a community. But I feel it every day. The news comes at us like, you know, it's like thrown at us through Instagram, social media, news feeds. It comes across, and it's hard not to get lost in despair and to fall into that state of like, we're gonna lose, because we're not gonna lose, we're gonna win. And we're gonna win because we, when we unite and come together and fight against this backlash and do it in a way that's supportive of the most vulnerable in the communities and lift each other up, we will win. It's not gonna be easy, because it's like whack-a-mole. Like every time you get one, there's another one popping up. But I think it's important to also remember queer joy and unity, and to see all the students that walked out of Nexus School, you know, in protest. Yes. Of the lack of response by the school and the accountability from the school. So, you know, young people seem united to me for the most part. They seem united. I think that I meet a lot of parents of queer kids, of TGNC youth, and they feel like they need support as well. I think that it's important for us. I was thinking about this, you know, that sometimes a single person feels like their voice isn't heard. They can't make a difference. And I do think it's important to remember that this election is not about two old white men running for president. So certainly about that, but it's also about school boards, and it's also about local government. A lot of these laws are done at a local level, and they create noise, and then they get copycats from others. So I think, you know, if anyone's like watching or listening, think about your local politics, think about who local officials are being, and you can make a difference, certainly at a local level. It's harder at a national level, but make a difference, you know, fight for and unite for the candidates who are not going to ban books from schools, support your librarians, support, you know, the right people running for school board and your local officials. And I think we'll start to see a lot more positive impact and not putting the hands of just a few crazies who like to who just thrive on being hurtful. I don't know if that answered your question. I feel like I just it was a long-winded answer, but
no, rambling. I think that was wonderful. And I think it is so important for us to be able to your point, laugh, celebrate joy, show people the humanity that all of us bring. And I think that is part of the fight. We can't pour from an empty cup. And so
that's right.
I think about that a lot. And also sometimes try to put in place some healthy boundaries from the news for myself, depending on the day.
So important to do that because, I mean, there's days when you just feel like it's just an endless battle. But there is joy, there's queer joy, there's human joy, there's intersectionality joy, there's, you know, supporting each other in joy, in justice also, you know, and justice can be joyful. Justice doesn't have to be painful. It can be joyful. And just finding our place in the world and supporting each other too. I think, you know, sometimes when I'm on social and I don't hear from someone in a while, if I see someone, I check in just to see how they're doing. Because a lot of us carry so much weight and we just have to check in with each other to make sure we're doing okay. You know, because sometimes silence is intentional. Sometimes it's not intentional. Sometimes it's just some of us are just consumed by the negativity, and just taking care of your friends, people you follow, your friends with, and just check in and see how they're doing.
Yes, so important. So I know you helped to write a new law that recently went into effect in California, AB 1084. And this law requires major retailers to provide a gender neutral section for toys and childcare items. Could you tell our listeners a bit more about that law and how it came about?
Absolutely. So this just shows what one individual can do. They're talking about, like, you know, the power of like what one person feel like they can't do, but one person can do. And so started off with a young girl named Britton, who's 8 years old, living in California, and she was studying dinosaurs. And she told her mom, "I want to buy a dinosaur t-shirt. Can we go to the mall and buy one?" And Danielle, her mom, took her to the mall, and there were no dinosaur t-shirts in the girls department. So she said, "Mom, I bet there's dinosaur t-shirts in the boys department." Sure enough, there were dinosaur t-shirts in the boys department, because the girls was, you know, full of like unicorns and you could imagine what the girls department was compared to the boys department. By the way, there's a whole separate conversation about, you know, just you understand about gender studies when you look at the language on boys and girls t-shirts and understand, to me, if we flip-flopped the t-shirts and the sayings, like how much better the world would be if like boys t-shirts said love is the way and girls will say, you know, conquer the world. I think we could start to really shift, you know, the world and how young people grow up. There's no surprise that 85% of suicides are by men because of our inability to allow boys to cry and to feel pain. And, you know, girls, on the other hand, you know, eating disorders, body dysphoria, because of how we raise girls. So that all of this is related. So back to Britton. So Britton says, "Mom, why don't there just a kids department? Why can't we just like have one kids department where there's not a boy section or girl section? Let us buy what we want." And so her mom says, "Well, why don't you write a bill and we'll bring it to our legislator?" So she did, and he's like, "Wow. Okay, this is great, but you probably need an adult to help you write this, and maybe a corporation can help sponsor it." So she said, "Mom, I bet the Fluid Project can help us." So her mom reached out to me. I responded back like, "This is amazing." So Britton and I crafted up a document and a bill that, you know, for California to have one kids department. And so we went through around 8 or 9 rounds of rewriting and rewriting with the legislator, Evan Lee, I think his name is. And we came down to finally getting it down to just the toy section, which was a compromise, but still something to move ahead. And sure enough, you know, I mean, we got resistance, pushback from the family quality and all these other, you know, conservative organizations, but we still got this, that a major department store retailer had to have an allocated gender neutral section for toys and healthcare goods, like you said, which was a big victory because now it's on the minds of now Walmart. Target's already there, but like other big retailers are like, wow, if we have to do it for California, maybe we should just do this for all of our stores. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the Governor Newsom signed it into law on, and it went into like, became a law starting this January, Bill 1084. So it just shows the power of one, thank you. What one kid could do, one kid who just looked and said, this is not right. And there's a better way. And it aligns with the mission statement of Fluid, which is we challenge boundaries with humanity. So we say just because something is one way doesn't mean that there's not a better way. So how can we do it through humanity? So this just, it aligned with Fluid's mission. And it's something that I'm really proud of, And it was an interesting process to go through together. So thank you to Britton for your vision and for doing something about it.
That is such an amazing story. And this just has all of my gears turning as well in terms of what's within our sphere of influence. How can we partner with others to make things happen if something may not be independently in our sphere of influence? And I love what you shared around. If we could just switch those t-shirt slogans, because, you know, I work with mostly adult learners and there's so much unlearning that we're doing in these workshops and learning sessions that I oftentimes think about, you know, what if we could just rewind and reach people earlier before they kind of internalize these messages?
That's so true. It's the work you do. I mean, I always say there's a process always of unlearning and relearning, that we're always unlearning something to relearn something else. We do it all the time. Yet people think it's such a struggle to use they, them pronouns. Like, it's not that hard. Like, you know, if someone gets married and takes on a new last name, you know, we don't think twice about that. We immediately, you know, adjust to it. And it's just, that's been normalized, but I don't know. I think there's so many ways that we can be better by just adjusting words and tweaking words. I like to say, you know, think about like a wedding ring. When 25 years ago, somebody was said, "Oh, so you're married? What's your wife's name?" Or "Your wife, and you should come over to our house for a cocktail party." And now people see a ring and they don't make assumptions. They say, "You and your partner, you know, should come over." And we figured how to just change one word to be more inclusive and to invite more people in and not to make assumptions. And it's not that hard. It's just, we already have the word. We're not creating new words. We're just already using them differently. So I think in 10 years, we'll look back and say, I can't believe this was such a big deal. but it is a big deal right now. And it's creating, it's the center of a culture war right now.
Yes.
Which I actually like, don't mind being in the center. I don't know about you, but I find it to be, you know, exciting to be a part of change, exciting to be on the right side of change, and not to be somebody who's watching externally and watching it happen, but to be inside and helping create the change and supporting and moving it forward. So I'm sure you feel the same way as well.
Absolutely. And I think I always think about, to your point, what side of history do you want to be on? This is your opportunity to show up for what you want the world to become. And we really need folks to step in, tell stories, get involved in whatever way makes sense for you and your sphere of influence. So,
also I would just say one thing I encourage everyone to do is to stay curious, you know, to stay open-minded and to say, you know, Well, and to also understand and to dig deep inside and say, where is this resistance coming from? Like, where is it coming from inside of me? Why am I resisting? Because there's something there. There's something that's not me. Because people are plenty smart enough to be able to, you know, unlearn and relearn. The question is, why are we so resistant? Why are some people so resistant? So I encourage anyone to stay in the space of curiosity, stay open-minded, and if it's going to affirm someone's experience, someone's life experience, if changing a word is going to do that, why would you not want to do that? Or at least make the attempt to do it. And I know that a lot of people are afraid they're going to screw up and they're going to mess up. And so they're not going to even talk to this person because they're afraid they're going to misgender them or something. You know what? Give yourself some grace. Understand that we do screw up sometimes. But if you go in with intention, like the right intention, things are going to be okay.
Yes. Yeah. Mistakes are part of the process. And
that's right.
I always tell people, you know, if you realize you've made a mistake, just briefly correct yourself and move on. It doesn't have to be the end of the world.
Oh my God, I can't believe I did this. I always do this. I like to say, like, if someone that you know, and let's say, for instance, Lee, you identified as non-binary, they, them, I'd walk up and say, hey, Lee, welcome, you know, to the team. My name is Rob. I use they pronouns. I understand you use they, them pronouns. I, you know, still getting used to this. If ever at all I misgender you, I apologize. And also know that I'll be working to ensure that the rest of our colleagues respect your gender. And I'll be working with on the sides on that. But welcome to the team. And that would be so affirming. Yeah. It gives you a little bit of space because, you know, you might mess up. But also shows that, like, and then it's done, you know, then the conversations happen. And I think that's, that'd be for me a really nice way to start, I think, a new job.
That's a great point, because I think it is so often just those little interactions that you may not even recognize how much they mean to someone, or how they can help someone to feel like they belong from day one, especially if some of the norms are still evolving within the organization. And I think that humility also is such a key piece to progress in any space in justice, just assuming that we all have more to learn. There's some things that because of our own personal lenses, we're going to miss, and making sure that we hold ourselves accountable to bringing curiosity over judgment.
Well said.
Thank you. So would love to just hear your thoughts about when you hear justice for all, what does that mean to you? What does it look like, sound like?
Justice for all, any way you conceptualize that. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like nirvana to me. It sounds like something that we work towards every day. I think the challenge is, like, justice for all to one person might look completely different to justice for all to another person. And I am super clear about what it looks like to me. And then probably you and I would be 99.9% agreed on what justice for all means. You know, I think that the challenge is, how do you have a conversation with someone who has a completely different view of what justice for all means? You know, that's where it's, for me, it's obvious what it is. It's, you know, racial equality, gender equality, you know, sexual orientation, and especially, you know, I would say, you know, ethnicity, faith. Like, I think that there's space for all of us to exist in a world in harmony and respect. It doesn't have to be, you know, one or the other. That justice is equal opportunities for everyone to achieve their dream without stepping in the back of someone else, you know, that it happens through our own support and belief. But, you know, it's unfortunate that a lot of people think that justice for all is their side only and not another. So, but also I think it's an opportunity for us to be empathetic and open-minded and go into conversations and to understand, like, what does justice for all mean for different people? And how do you get a room full of people who have different ideas of that to try to align and to come together? it feels impossible in today's, you know, environment. But I think that, you know, for me personally, justice for all means equal opportunities for everyone, both in equity and your ability to live without fear or any laws created to try to eliminate your existence, and just to be able to go through life effortlessly with opportunity. That's what justice for all means to me.
So beautifully put. Thank you.
Shouldn't be so damn hard. My God. But there are, it's nice to see someone like you and your organization committed to justice for all, because, you know, and even if you have it, if I have it and you don't, the fight's not done. I'm not resting until it is justice for all. You know, I can live my life and have opportunity and justice. There's lots of people who dislike me for who I am, what I stand for, what I say, who I love, who I worship. And there'll always be that battle. But, you know, if let's say I'm 90% of the people accept me and 10% don't, but still, I still want to focus my energy and my time, not on like my existence, but on others, and taking the opportunities that I've been given to create opportunities for other people who look different than me and act different. And so that's where I get excited about my purpose in life right now, is creating justice for all outside of just the queer community, but all communities. Not all, because there's certainly some people who do not, you know, white supremacists do not deserve justice for all, but for the most part, yeah. Yes, you know what I'm saying.
Yes, I've got you. And I think it is just, as I think about this, I think it's so important for us to be able to recognize what fear may be driving people's resistance, and be able to, you know, in the ways available to us when we have the energy on the days that we can use our power and influence and are able to show up in that way, to do so. And so I love your story and what you've shared with us today.
I do think there's a way somehow, and I'm trying to work on a platform to humanize the queer experience, to, you know, if you think about where, you know, when I'm a man in my late 50s, and when I came out, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy was popular on television and Will and Grace. And as a result, you know, more and more like cousins and colleagues and people started to say, I'm also gay. And it kind of, and so I think we need this same opportunity right now for TGNC folks. So to humanize, for people who are sitting in their living room and they're only exposed to like Fox News, to understand that there's actually a human experience. There's a personal story. There's someone who is, who's living a life of challenges. And I think if we begin to humanize the trans experience, humanize the queer experience, it'll eliminate the fear that other people are creating this narrative that you should be afraid of these people, to say like, oh my God. And then maybe there's, and sometimes humor is the common language that we all speak. And so trying to find something where humor is the way we're communicating and educating.
You are speaking my language. I was just talking about this with some of my colleagues, that it really is comedy and laughing that gets me through so many days and so many weeks. And it's why I am such a big proponent of storytelling, because, you know, we can see statistics in the news, we can see news stories, but actually hearing from someone about their personal experiences and really reflecting on, you know, what similarities you have with them, what differences you've experienced. There's just no substitute for that. So
there's not. So that's a seed I'm planting right now, this project I'm planting. So it's a seed I'm planted in and I'm watering right now, and hopefully it will come to life soon and flourish. Next, my new project.
Is there anything you'd like to share about that project with us?
I'm still in pitch mode, but I'm pitching it to to networks right now and producers. Yeah.
Wonderful. Oh, that's so exciting.
Thanks.
So
if we can end up in people's living rooms, in their television sets or tablets, however they watch, and create something that is going to pull more people in, not just ourselves, but more people, I think change will start to happen in a positive way.
I am so here for that. And even just thinking back to what you shared around the history of representation or lack thereof in media versus what we've been able to see in just the past 5 or 10 years has been, I think, really encouraging to me in a lot of ways. And I feel like we're going to see so many more expansive stories represented and told as we look to the future.
I think so too. And then as that happens, hopefully people's hearts soften, you know, their idea, their fear begins to disappear. And instead, because in the human experience, they understand that when we're all humans dealing with the same emotions and challenges, we become more universal and people will soften their, you know, it was not that long ago where 40% of Americans accepted gay men and gay women. Today it's like 85%. It's 40% of Americans accept TGNC folks. Our goal is that, you know, in a generation of 25 years, which seems like a long time, but it'll be 85%. That's where I hope we can move forward towards.
Yes, we're manifesting this.
We are manifesting it. And 25 years is a long ass time. But I can tell you, as somebody like who's on the other side of it, time flies, you know. It's just the goal is to keep as many people alive and safe in that process. And so it's if I could expedite 25 years and make it 5 years, I would do it. But it's just about, you know, moving forward and not backwards and continue to move forward in this progress.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. And as we prepare to close out, I just wanted to share that you will be joining us at our Racial Justice at Work Summit, speaking on breaking the gender binary. I was wondering if you could give just a brief preview of what folks can expect to learn about if they are able to join us.
Yeah, I mean, the gender binary is thousands of years old. And, you know, I like to go back, start way back for 4,000 years ago and understand that there's always been a space in between the male and female existence. And that, you know, we mentioned two spirits, but it's always been there. And then so how we start to break that apart and see what that looks like from what it is to be male, what it is to be female, as we've been told, you know, around the world, but also understand that there's an opportunity, especially as the divine feminine begins to, you know, come back into balance, that what does it look like through fashion, through attitude, through socialization? And then how do we start to think about if we break apart the gender binary, what happens when it's opened up and how do we create this world, this human experience where we're not locked into this box or this box that we're open up, and there's so much more potential and the space between the two. So that's what we'll talk about.
Oh, that's so exciting. And I think I love just that reminder that, you know, this is not something new. I think a lot of the fear that we see is driven by this is new, this is different, this is you know, disrupting our norms. And in fact, as you share, there is such a rich history in so many different cultures of gender expansiveness that has
all around
just been
the world
erased through a lack of representation. And it's such an important narrative to disrupt.
It's been erased basically through colonization. I mean, it's been erased through the patriarchy and through colonization, but it's existed everywhere. In some places, it still exists and still thrives. That has not been suffocated. So, you know, it's about reminding people that it's always been there. We're going to bring it back. We're going to talk about how when we break it apart and give people the opportunity to get out of their box, that there's so much more potential in life, so much opportunity for joy and living when it's broken apart.
Yes, we are here to spread the word.
Yes, I look forward to it. Thanks for the opportunity, Lee.
Thank you so much for joining me today. It has been an absolute pleasure. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience before we wrap up?
Gosh, no, just continue to, in every way we can, whether it's small or large, each one of us can make an impact. You know, when you think about justice for all, whether it's just correcting somebody's, supporting somebody who has gender neutral pronouns, standing up for somebody, donating time and money, every one of us can make a difference in a small way or a big way, but we are all, you know, capable of manifesting and creating change.
Thank you so much. What a great note to end on.
Thank you.
So thanks so much to our listeners for joining us on today's episode of our season 7 on the theme of Justice for All for the Inclusion Solution Live podcast. My name is Lee Morrison, and until next time, keep working toward justice for all. Thank you.